Stupid thing.
I'm just having fun.
Seeing ghosts.
The Forgotten Camp.
We're on to Cincinnati. It's nothing about the past, nothing about the future. It's right now we're preparing for Cincinnati.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by Trey Watkins, per usual. One show this week, one sort of mega-ish show. Well, not mega, it's still probably going to be about an hour, 15 minutes. On the Super Bowl week. And then maybe a little bit of extra content coming later this week that might be surprised though. So maybe keep an eye on. Maybe we do it, maybe we don't. It'll just all depend on how we're feeling. But Trey, how are you doing? It's Super Bowl week. And it's a good time to wait.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing fine. I mean, it's raining right now, so the rain lulls me to sleep a little bit, but the football talk should wake me up. But, I mean, yeah, Super Bowl week should be fun. We'll see how it goes, though. Should be fun.
Yeah. There's so much going on right now. We are recording this. I'm going to put this out later in the week, but we are recording this on Saturday night. Matthew Stafford just got traded. We are obviously going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl matchups, questions we have, and then we're going to do some picks. Okay. I'm actually going to do something really quick. I'm going to text Travis and see if he has questions. For this, but while I do that, Matthew Stafford traded from the Detroit Lions to the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams sending two future first round picks, a third overall pick, and Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm.
Let me break this down because I know a lot of people are freaking out about the cost and stuff. To me, one of those first round picks is to take on Goff's contract.
Yeah, that's I agree with that.
To be like totally honest. Like there's some Brock Osweiler to the Browns type stuff going on.
Yeah, and that was my initial thing. I saw the two firsts, and then I saw Jared Goff's name attached to the trade, and I said, no way, Stafford cost two first round picks alone. I mean, Stafford's good. We agree. First round picks alone. So it's reasonable to assume that that extra first and that third, and well, no, I'll just say the first. I think the first and third, was the original deal, but that extra first went in with Jared Goff just to help with the contract situation. But yeah, that's a nice size haul for Detroit. Really nice size haul. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with Jared Goff. Who knows? With the cap hit he has and all the money he's owed. But I think it's a decent trade for both sides in terms of draft capital acquired and finally the quarterback that Sean McVay has needed and wanted for years. Like, for years. Ever since he became the coach of the L.A. Rams, or maybe ever since that steep decline of Jared Goff's play while he was in L.A. Rams.
Yeah, I'm honestly not too surprised that it cost that much. But I also think that Matthew Stafford is like vastly undervalued by the football community. I think that's what I've learned over the past 2 weeks. I've had people that like, and not to call It's not really calling him out. We have a good relationship, so I don't think you'll mind. We're going to talk about this offseason when I inevitably have him on. But did you see Joe Rose tweet?
I did.
He compared Matthew Stafford to Joe Flacco. And that's just like the most laughably, like, I don't know. It's just one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in person.
No.
And I mean, I'm not calling Joe Rose stupid. He's very smart. He's much smarter than me. He watches a ton of Broncos stuff, and he knows way more than me. And he watches a lot of good quarterbacks, and he knows what he's talking about. But I very much disagree with him on this point. To watch Matthew Stafford even for a moment and say, oh, he's just better Joe Flacco, is so insulting to Matthew Stafford. One, like, Matthew Stafford at the peak of his powers a few years ago was a top five NFL quarterback. And he was making incredible throws. Go watch any of his games against the Packers, and you see him carve up a defense. And he does this on a weekly basis. He is a really good passer. And okay, maybe he is a pure pocket passer. Maybe he's not as mobile as some quarterbacks, but he still does bootleg rollouts. The Lions have that in their offense. Like, Matthew Stafford compared to Joe Flacco, I personally don't see it. I just think it's ridiculous to even bring those two up together. I'd be interested to hear his argument, and we're going to have him on the podcast to talk about it. But just for me right now, I just totally disagree. And I think the whole football community vastly undervalues Matthew Stafford. He's also a guy that is only 33 years old, and people are like, oh, he's so old and he's got a back injury. He has had one injury his entire career that happened a year ago. Before that, he was one of the most reliable quarterbacks to start in the NFL. He had a starting streak at one point. Like, I don't understand the hate for Matthew Stafford around the NFL. I really don't. I mean, he's a great NFL quarterback, and people like severely undervalue him. That's my opinion on the whole thing. And the fact that people say, oh, he's 33, like, okay, so Aaron Rodgers is 38 years old and just put up one of the greatest quarterback seasons of all time. Tom Brady is in the Super Bowl and is 42 years old. The concept of age does not exist for quarterbacks drafted after 2000. The technology and sports science that has come along allows quarterbacks to play into their 40s with success at this point. Like, no one watches Aaron Rodgers and says, oh, he's gonna fall off in like 2 years. Like, nobody says that. Like, and even if you do believe in that, he's still got 6 years before that quote unquote cliff hits. Like, I really don't understand it. Do you, Trey? I just feel like everybody in the football community has really disrespected him over the past few months. And I think it's going to come back and bite them in all their, asses. I mean, I legitimately think under Sean McVay's offense, Matthew Stafford is about to have an MVP season.
No, I disagree with Joe's take. Stafford.
Really?
I disagree.
You don't think that? Well, wait, do you disagree with my take or the
Joe? No, Joe's take. I was going back to Joe's take.
Gotcha.
Joe's take. No, I disagree with Joe's take 100%. Matthew Stafford had a real good year last year, or this season, despite all the shortcomings and all the crap that was thrown his way. Whether it was in his control or not, he stuck through it and still put up a good season. Now, to your point, I do agree somewhat. I like to hold off on saying this guy or this player can have an MVP type season until I see them start playing on the field. Now, if we're talking about somebody like Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, those quarterbacks, then I can jump in that water of risk and uncertainty with you and say that that guy's going to have an MVP type season. But I like to go safe with these things and like to hold off until I see some consistent or night or handful amount of game action before I make those sort of judgments. But I do think that Stafford going to LA with Sean McVay, I think that Rams offense has a chance to get back to the wondrous and breakthrough and crazy offense that everybody fawned over when Jared Goff and Sean McVay were at the top of their powers. What was it? I believe 2017, 2018. I can't remember the specific year, but the year when everybody was fawning over that Rams offense and thinking, wow, this could be a great partnership for the next decade plus or so. Stafford is much better than Jared Goff. Smarter quarterback, probably not as mobile. But who cares at this? Who cares about mobility at this point? I guess when you're discussing the Rams offense, Stafford can still, like you said, do those boot rollouts. Excuse me, and he just puts the ball where he needs to be. Now Stafford sometimes has some head scratching turnovers, and that's fine. He's a gunslinger. He likes to throw the ball all over the field, but he's still a much, much, much better option than Jared Goff at quarterback for the Rams moving forward. And I think this was a fantastic move by the Rams, fantastic move for Sean McVay, fantastic move for the Rams in their short-term window to win the Super Bowl. Because now with Matthew Stafford, if Matthew Stafford can put up some really, really good numbers in that Rams offense and that defense can still remain top of the cream of the crop without Brandon Staley, that Rams team is a Super Bowl contender. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That Rams team is the Super Bowl contender, so it'll be interesting to see what that Rams offense does, what that Rams team, period, does next season with Matthew Stafford at the helm and a chance to compete in the NFC West and win the NFC potentially.
Yeah, and for people saying, you know, oh, the Rams are ruining their future by trading all these draft picks, like, I just hardcore disagree, and I'm crafting this tweet right now, actually. Let me read you some Rams draft picks since 2016. Tyler Higbee, fourth rounder. Josh Reynolds, fourth rounder. Cooper Kupp, third rounder. Gerald Everett, second rounder. Hold on. I'm scrolling up here. The silence is me scrolling up. Daryl Henderson, third rounder, ended up is a starter for them now. Taylor Rapp, second rounder. This year alone, Terrell Burgess, before he got hurt, was a starter for them, third rounder. Terrell Lewis, third rounder. Van Jefferson, second rounder. Cam Akers, second rounder. First round picks don't matter this team because they draft well. They draft well in the later rounds and they still get studs. And they develop players. I mean, I truly do not understand why people are freaking out about it.
Well, that's because people these days love to tag early or really decent draft capital as immovable objects unless you're trading for some elite player. And that's just not true these days, especially when you have teams that if they just need to make one single move for a position that's really crucial to their success, they just need to go for it, no matter the draft capital that they need to give up. That's just the way it is these days. And people will start to understand that sooner or later once that team starts winning Super Bowl titles. And forget Super Bowl titles, just improving on the success that they had the previous season. So they'll start to understand that sooner or later. At least I hope so, because that's just the cream of the crop. That's just the way of the game. That's just the way it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's absolutely patently ridiculous that all these draft nerds are saying, oh, they don't really care about the draft. Yeah, they do. They just draft well. Like, Taylor Rapp is one of the most underrated safeties in the NFL, and they got him in the second round. Cooper Kupp is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. He was a third rounder. Like, come on now. Like, let's let's open our eyes a little bit. Like, it's legitimately ridiculous. Like, how much hate they get for this.
That's just the way it is, though, with people and their opinions these days, Eric.
Yeah. So this makes the Rams a Super Bowl contender next year, correct?
100%. I think it. See, and look, if that defense can just even if that defense isn't, you know, as suffocating as it was this year, but it can still stay in that top 10 range, then yes, they're Super Bowl contender. 100%.
Yeah. Don't let the draft nerds tell you you can't build a team without first rounders, because the Rams have.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nope. Other, well, I guess you could say, where do the other quarterback needy teams go now that Stafford's off the board? I mean, there's Watson. But Watson's going to cost a lot, and the Texans are going to be hesitant to give him up. I guess if you're an NFC team, you have a good shot at him, or a better shot at acquiring him. But even then, the price is still going to be steep. I guess where does Watson go? That's probably going to be the major storyline of the NFL offseason. So maybe in sports, who knows though?
I think he might be trapped, to be completely honest. I was DMing with our boy, that boy Wolf, Ryan, about this. I think he's trapped because people are going to basically look at, this Houston situation and say, okay, well, you know, even though one of those picks was for Goff's contract, like the Texans are going to use that as leverage. And also the Texans have come out here in the past few days and said they actively do not want to trade him. So like, I just see this being one of the most ponderously tiring storylines of the entire offseason, to be completely honest with you. And I think there is a 50-50 shot. He just doesn't move and ends up doing some sort of a holdout to start the season, and it becomes really annoying. So buckle in, Trey, because this is what we're going to be forced to talk about when we come back in March.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any – see, with the way that players have such improved – control over their movement these days, and the PR negativity that can come with holding players against their will. I seriously don't think he's trapped. I think this saga is going to go on for a lot longer than people might think. It's going to go deep into the offseason, 100%. I think that. But I think eventually he's going to get moved, because if the Texans keep him, Cal McNair is going to be taking a crap ton of heat. And I know it seems like Cal McNair doesn't care about the horrible PR that he's getting, but it's the same thing could be said with the whole I'm trying to think of a situation that's comparable to this. Well, either way, the horrible PR Cal McNair is getting, he can't just sit there and keep taking it at this point. I think everybody has a grasp of what the Texans franchise is at this point, and how much Deshaun Watson is carrying it, and how much he means to the smidgen of success that they barely get close to getting whenever they play their game. So I think Watson's eventually going to get moved. If he does get held captive, or if he does stay trapped, then I'd be surprised. That's just me, though.
Yeah. I would not. I kind of see that happening.
Really?
Completely honest with you. I mean, it doesn't seem like they want to trade him, and they can't be forced to trade him.
No, of course. Not by some outside party, but it's just the point of What's the winner? It's just the point of, I guess you could say, the whole negative attention from the inside that can come with this. I'm trying to think of the words I'm trying to use to describe what I'm trying to say, but I don't know. I just think he's going to get moved. There's no way. It's hard to keep players captive these days. If a player requests a trade and we don't want to trade him, it's hard to do that these days. Extremely hard. Now, it's a little bit easier with Watson, considering he has that fat contract that he signed, which he still shouldn't have signed in the first place. Mm-hmm. But it's still really difficult to just keep players against their will in terms of trade demands these days.
Yeah. We will see what happens. Okay, let's move on. Big game. Big game time.
Sunday.
Super Bowl 55.
Mm-hmm.
Chiefs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better Super Bowl matchup. Because, I mean, the storylines write themselves. They really do. You know, who is the GOAT? The new age versus the old guns. You know, everybody loves – the NFL loves new versus old. The NFL loves generations, loves generation matchups where you could say, oh, look, it's the old guys. Or, oh, look, here's the young guns coming in to steal the show. And now you got the youngest of all young guns, Patrick Mahomes, taking on – the GOAT, the oldest of the old vets, and the man who is still playing out of his mind. It's Tom Brady. And holy cow, man, what a matchup. That figures to be. I am pretty excited for it, to be completely honest with you. I don't know what to expect quite yet. I'll kind of save my thoughts for picks a little bit, just because or it's really gonna shine through, I think, because I do think one team pulls away from the other kind of late, but I do think this is going to be an entertaining Super Bowl. So I thought the way we could attack this is if we take ourselves inside the mind of both coaches and talk about the matchup we most fear. Like the part of the game where we most fear for each coach. And then while we're doing that, think about a question or two, Trey, you might have about the game, and we'll ask each other those questions, one each, and then we'll get to picks. But let's get to kind of some of the X's and O's here. Let's start with the harder one. Let's start with Andy Reid. Okay. If you're Andy Reid, what are you worried about by the Bucs?
If I'm Andy Reid, what concerns me the most about the Buccaneers is their pass rush against the Chiefs' injury-riddled offensive line. Now, the Chiefs have had injuries all year along the offensive line. Kelechi Osemele went down earlier in the year. Their starting guard, I can't remember his name, but he opted out of the year to help fight the COVID situation, which is a heroic thing of him to do, by the way. Mitchell Schwartz, their all-pro right tackle, has fought through injuries all year. He didn't play. I don't believe he played against Buffalo in the AFC title game, and I don't know his status for the Super Bowl. And Eric Fisher, their starting left tackle, who has been somewhat steady all year, ruptured his Achilles against Buffalo in garbage time too, which is a big extra whammy on things. So you're putting those replacements on the Chiefs offensive line against the Tampa Bay Bucks defensive line, which consists of nobody special, just Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea, Shaq Barrett, and Jason Pierre-Paul. So that's a daunting challenge for any starting offensive line unit in the NFL. Now imagine how challenging it's going to be when you have some injuries well, not just some, a good amount of injuries along that offensive lines and at key positions too. So that's going to be a real good matchup to watch, because the Chiefs love that short passing game. They've loved it a lot more this year. But they also love just to stick it back, put their speedy wide receivers out wide, and just chuck it deep with a variety of route combinations and play designs. So it'll be interesting to see if Patrick Mahomes has the time to function in that offense because of the injuries along his offensive line and because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers pass rush is still so daunting. So it'll be interesting to see how the Chiefs handle that Bucks pass rush with all those injuries up front on the offensive line.
I'm Andy Reid. I'm worried about the tight ends and specifically Cameron Brate, who has been way more involved come playoff time. He's played two really good games over the past two games, and Gronk has not been as involved, but I could totally see Gronk having a big play in the Super Bowl. I really do think that the one place where I see a slight like disadvantage for the Chiefs on defense is the linebackers. To me, that's like the only real quote unquote weakness. I think the corners are extremely well coached and have proven to be very, very good. I would argue almost elite. They've played really well.
They have.
Obviously, the safety tandem is unmatched. I mean, Juwan Thornhill and Tyrann Mathieu, you don't really need to say more there. And they have the guys on the defensive line with Chris Jones and Frank Clark and everyone up front. But I do sort of worry about their linebackers, and I think the tight ends could have an impact in the game. And you know, I'm also worried about, if for that matter, about Leonard Fournette having sort of a big game, and he has played really well over the playoffs. So you really do have to take him seriously for as many, you know, bad things as we've said about him on this podcast. Like, he has played really well these past two games, and you got to take him seriously.
Yeah, I agree with you on all those points, especially the Leonard Fournette point. Buffalo, as we all know, didn't run the ball well in the regular season, and they didn't run it well in the playoffs. But they had a little bit of success running the football against Kansas City. And that's a little bit concerning when you have a running back that's playing much better, playing his best football of the year in the playoffs, and then he has a groove going. So I think the Chiefs, the one thing the Chiefs linebackers are good at is stopping plugging holes and stopping the run. But like you said, they're prone to giving up some plays in the passing game to tight ends because they're just not that good in that aspect of pass coverage. So that'll be a real interesting thing to watch, like you said, Eric.
All right. So, yeah, I think we both well, we got to talk about now, obviously, the easier question. What is Bruce Arians worried about going into this matchup?
I think you have to be concerned about Tyreek Hill and solely Tyreek Hill. We saw what happened the last time the Bucs played the Chiefs, the fact that the Bucs just couldn't cover Tyreek Hill. They couldn't do it at all. They tried everything. They tried off. They tried a safety over the top. They tried to get him at the line of scrimmage, put their hands on him, rough him up a little bit, and disrupt his routes. None of it could work. And it just speaks to the narrative and further proves it that no corner on earth can truly cover Tyreek Hill one-on-one. He's a matchup nightmare. He's the living definition of a matchup nightmare. And if you I can't even say if you don't have a plan. It's hard to have a plan to limit what Tyreek Hill can do in the passing game. So I don't know what the Bucs are going to do when it comes to covering Tyreek Hill. I don't know if they're going to stick Carlton Davis on again, whether they're going to try bracketing him, doing something just to get some bodies on him, take away the space that he's so dangerous in, and hopefully for the Bucks case, or on the for the Bucks side, take an important piece, offensive piece, out of the Chiefs' game plan, and hopefully take a step forward towards winning the football game.
Yeah. I'd be equally worried about Travis Kelce. I know that the Bucks have thumpers at linebackers. We kind of talked about this on the recap show, but I just feel like if you take away Tyreek Hill, there's going to be space underneath, and Travis Kelce is just going to feast off that. And I just
plus that running game could get going too.
Yeah, that's another great point, Trey. I don't know, dude. I worry a ton about Travis Kelce, to be completely honest with you. I think he's a matchup nightmare for anyone he plays, and you know, you have to keep him pinned down. And frankly, I don't really know if the Bucks can.
Nobody has the personnel to keep up with Travis Kelce. I don't think, and that's why teams try to double him. They leave Tyreek Hill one on one. If you double Tyreek Hill, you leave Travis Kelce one on one. It's a never ending seesaw of emotions and frustrations and stress that goes with trying to cover the Chiefs. And specifically with Travis Kelce, the Bucks have an impressive group of safeties. There's Antoine Winfield, and there's Whitehead, also for the Buccaneers. But I think you would. I don't think you would take those any of those two in a one-on-one matchup against Travis Kelce. And same goes for the linebackers. Like you said, Devin White, Levante David, they're two star guys. Those guys are thumpers. They can put their hands on you, put their pads on you, and just completely rock you. But none of those two are particularly exceptional when it comes to one-on-one and pass coverage. Both of them are really, really good players, and they can really show up your run game. But they're just not all that good, all that, I guess, say elite in terms of covering the pass or playing man and manning up against a tight end and just trying to take him out the game. Excuse me, or trying
it's
to
all
take
good.
Him out.
No worries.
No, all right. But trying to take them out the game. So. That's an equally, like you said, an equally concerning question for the Buccaneers as well.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's move on. Our questions about the game, I'll let you go first, and then we'll do our questions. We'll talk about our questions, just one each, and then we'll make some picks and – I think by the end of that, we should be good to go. I know this is a shorter show, and it feels like, you know, oh, you guys aren't doing that much on the Super Bowl. Well, I feel like all we really need is one show to, you know, dive into the stuff we need to talk about. And also, we're busy. And my work schedule is a nightmare this week. So, unfortunately, I'd like to be able to put out more stuff, but it's just going to have to be this one for this week. But hopefully we'll get this out. I mean, I don't remember what time we started. I know we took a little pause, so I feel like we've probably got what, like right now, like 35 minutes, maybe
35, 40, somewhere in that range,
something like that. And hopefully after we get done talking about this, it'll all end up being about, you know, an hour, 10 minutes long, and good for all you guys. And just before we get into that, let's just do the housekeeping now. We'll do a show directly after the Super Bowl. It's always a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. And after that, don't expect to hear from us unless here's our caveat, Trey. Here's what we will come back for. We will come back if Deshaun Watson gets traded.
Yes.
Deshaun Watson gets traded that day. We will have a Deshaun Watson is traded. The offseason is over. Huzzah podcast. But any other move, even if it's significant, probably don't expect us back until March. But if Deshaun Watson gets moved, that's when the offseason will start for us. So
yep.
With that said, Trey, why don't you go ahead and ask your first question. And only question. Sorry, we're only asking
question. I got you. Okay. Mr. Eric Jensen, I have a one simple question for you. If you are Todd Bowles and you're sitting there during the week practicing, watching film, looking, being concerned about all the matchups and all the nightmares that exist in that Chiefs offense, what do you do to try your best to take away one of the weapons, either Kelce or Hill? And do you live with that? Do you try to take away Kelce or Hill? And you live with the one-on-ones that will come if you try to take away one of the two?
I think simply because I have the personnel for it. And this is concerning because he wasn't practicing today. I think I put Antoine Winfield double covering on either Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill. But honestly, I'd probably put him on Tyreek Hill because I feel like, as we mentioned before, the linebackers are meant to kind of thump. And if you allow the Travis Kelce stuff underneath, you're going to be trusting Devin White and Lavonte David to make a play and potentially force a fumble, basically, and try to play the turnover game underneath. So whereas, you know, if you don't double team Tyreek Hill, he is going to beat you deep down the field and it'll be over just like that. You know, it's a matter of choosing the slower death, I think, and trying to play to hold the Chiefs field goals rather than I think this game is over if the Chiefs hit the big plays, because if you get into a shootout where the Chiefs are just hitting big play after big play, nobody can beat the Chiefs. Like, it's just impossible. So I think you have to use Antoine Winfield. I think you have to use him to double cover Tyreek Hill. And you really got to hope that your corner has a better day than he did in week, whatever that was, week 8, when he gave up like 200 yards in the first quarter. So you really got to hope your best corner does better. And I'm honestly not sure which corner they'll put on him, to be completely honest. I guess a counter question that's not my actual question for you, Trey, is who do you think they'll put on Tyreek Hill as far as a cornerback goes?
That's an interesting question, because, I mean, the last time the Chiefs played the Bucks, I believe it was in November or December. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that. I believe it was in November. Last time the Bucks played the Chiefs, they put Carlton Davis on him, with the idea of Carlton Davis being a more physical, length or taller corner. That way he can get his hands on Tyreek Hill at the line of scrimmage, and just play straight up what they've been doing all year, which is blitzing and playing a good bit of man coverage. So as we all know, that didn't work out well. Tyreek Hill had over 200 yards receiving in the first half, and it just didn't work out. So all their corners are at least 5'11", and I don't know about each of their speed, but I just bet that none of these corners are fast enough to keep up with Tyreek Hill. So I think if I was Todd Bowles, I think you just, wherever Tyreek Hill lines up and wherever your corner or your corners will line up on your defense during that specific play or during that specific series, you're just going to have to live with that, and bracket or single cover. Do whatever you got to do just to try to take Tyreek Hill out the game, because there's no corner on that Bucks defense that's going to be able to keep up with Tyreek Hill in the speed game. We saw last week with Tre'Davious White. Tyreek Hill, Tre'Davious White is considered one of the best corners of football. Tyreek Hill smoked that man every single time he was lined up against him. He couldn't get a hand on him. And even if he did get a hand on him, he just outran him. So there's no way. It's just he's just too fast, too good of a route runner, too quick. I don't know which corner. And I can't decide which corner you would put on him. I think it's best to just go with what you got and hope for the best. That's all you can do at this point. It's past the realm of normal football personnel and scheme. It's past all this now with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely correct. It is past that at this point. Okay. So, you know, with that said, my question for you is as follows. Will Tom Brady, because I think it devolves into this, will Tom Brady be able to keep up in a shootout with Patrick Mahomes?
No. I really don't think so. That Bucs offense has been really good for about, what, 8-9 weeks now. They started around towards the middle / end of the year, and they got their groove. The run game started getting going. They found more consistency in the passing game, specifically with their tight ends, Brate, Gronk. They got those two involved a lot more in the passing game. You saw their numbers explode on the scoreboard and just their statistics, period, in the passing game and the run game. So, yes, their offense has exploded, but to keep up with the Chiefs in the shootout, you have to be 100% perfect on the offensive side of the ball. Whether that's having a crazy play or two go your way, because the Chiefs aren't just some pushover defensively. They're a pretty nice defensive unit to go along with that explosive offense that they have. So you're going to have to compete against the prospect of scoring points. Keeping up against that Chiefs defense. And even if you can start getting some movement on that side of the ball against the Chiefs defense, like I said, you're going to have to be perfect in execution. And from what we've seen from the run of Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, during the Chiefs losses, those teams have been either close to perfect or perfect offensively. And you just go back to the Raiders loss when the Chiefs lost, I believe, their only game of the regular season earlier in this season when they played the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders were perfect offensively. Well, damn near perfect offensively. Running game got going. Derek Carr was really, really good. And the offense just had a good day. The Chiefs ran into a turnover or two, I believe, and that's how the game ended up. With the Raiders winning. So you're going to have to be damn near perfect offensively. The Bucs have the weapons to be perfect offensively. Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. If Antonio Brown plays, you have Antonio Brown, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, Cameron Brayton, Rob Gronkowski. That's a dream team of offensive weapons that you have. Even if some of those players aren't what they used to be, they're still putting out good performances here and there. Give or take. So, but still, it's hard to fathom any sort of offense being perfect, 100% perfect, especially in the Super Bowl. And I know you have Tom Brady at the helm. He's played crap ton of Super Bowls, obviously, but it's just going to be damn near impossible to stay 100% perfect on offense. It's just going to be damn near impossible.
All right. To me, I think you're right. I don't think he can quite keep up. But I do think this is going to be a good game. And this is where we get to picks. To me, I think it's a good game because you look at the both defenses, I believe both of them can be exploited at points, even though the Chiefs have been playing very well recently. I think that the Buccaneers wide receivers can have success. I think this is going to be kind of a shootout early, but at a point, Patrick Mahomes pulls away. I mean, this is going against my oldest rule, which is never pick against Tom Brady. But I found the new rule, and it's never pick against Patrick Mahomes. And I truly believe by the end of his career, Mahomes is going to have a shot at Brady for the title of the greatest of all time. And, you know, this matchup matters for that, because if Patrick Mahomes loses to Tom Brady, it's going to take that much more for Tom, for people to accept someday, even if it might be factual, that Patrick Mahomes is a better overall quarterback in NFL history than Tom Brady. But if he wins this tiebreaker right here, so rarely in sports, we never got a Jordan versus LeBron final. We never, you know, got that. Like, this is where you decide who these generational deciding games just come around once every so often. And I'm so excited to watch it. And I just think Patrick Mahomes comes out on top. I think the Chiefs win 42-24.
I am 100% agreeing with you on the whole aspect of the Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady GOAT debate, because we've said it, a lot of all of us have said it, that Patrick Mahomes has a really good shot at finishing as the best sort of, as the greatest quarterback of all time, even above Tom Brady, even with all the accolades that Tom Brady has accumulated over his long and illustrious career. Patrick Mahomes has a chance to top that and do much more, because it's just, it's set up perfectly for him over the next 10 to 15 years to get crap ton of rings, a crap ton of accolades, yards, touchdowns, breaking records, all that mess. He has a chance to do all that. And beating Tom Brady, this is not his last season, not it by any means, but beating Tom Brady when he's closer to the end of his career than he is to being in his prime or whatnot, but being Tom Brady at this point, adding your second ring in what, your 4 years as a starting quarterback, and you're going to be sitting pretty. And I think that's what the Chiefs will do. I think they'll win against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55. I think it'll be a close game for about a quarter and a half. But I think the Chiefs, like you said, start to pull away towards the end of the half, second half, and they walk away with their second ring in three seasons. Or excuse me, second rings in three seasons as Patrick Mahomes. This is third season as a starting quarterback. Excuse me, I said four earlier. It's third season starting quarterback. But I think Patrick Mahomes walked away with his second ring in 3 years as a starting quarterback. And it'll be the start of a long and illustrious career for Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, before you make your pick, you have really two options here in terms of our ice cream sandwich playoff picks.
Okay.
You are currently 8-4. I am 9-3.
All right.
We're picking against the spread a little bit here. So I've obviously picked the Chiefs to cover.
Okay.
So either you can pick it to be a close game, and I'll give you the opportunity to best me by picking the Super Bowl MVP as well.
Okay.
And that'll come back to bite me. I know it. But I'm a good guy, and I'm going to give you ample chance to beat me here.
I appreciate it.
Or, I mean, you can go whatever you want. Well, I don't like that, because I want you to pick whatever you want to pick. I'm ahead right now.
Yeah.
So what's the best way to determine this? Because you're 8-4 and I'm 9-3. So there's technically a way. I don't know. Do you just want to concede ice cream sandwiches, or I'll let you choose what you want to do here?
See, the competitor in me wants you to give me an opportunity to jump on a chance. But I think I might have to concede here simply because I want to be fair. I want to be fair in competition and rules. So I think I'll concede in the ice cream sandwich race this year. But I'm coming for that next year. Let's believe that.
All right. I'll drop Venmo. You can send me $3. I will go get some ice cream sandwiches later this week. What's the final score?
I'll Apple Pay you. I don't use Venmo. I'll Apple Pay you.
I don't have Apple Pay.
You don't?
No.
Ooh. That's so easy. Okay.
Well, I don't my trust Apple.
Wow. Okay. I'll see what I can do with Venmo. I don't use Venmo at all. But my score, I'll say Chiefs 36, Bucks 24.
All right. With that, folks, that's it. Last preview show of the year. Always a good time. Always fun to break down the Super Bowl. This will be up again Tuesday, Wednesday. And me and Trey will be back, I think, like half an hour after the Super Bowl. We'll record and I'll put it up that night. And then we'll tweet it out the next day, too. We'll tweet it out that night. We'll tweet it out the next day. And then it's the off season for a month. So that, well, until just Sunday, Trey. No need for mushy goodbyes tonight. We will see you then. Sleep well, everybody, and get ready for the Super Bowl. Oh, and we never do this because I figure most of the people are NFL fans that listen to this, but just in case you didn't know, some brief broadcasting information on the Super Bowl. It'll be played next Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be on CBS. So check that out. Watch it. I mean, all of America watches the Super Bowl, or should at least watch the Super Bowl. So you have no excuse next week when we put the podcast out not to send this to everybody you know and be like, hey, if you didn't understand the game yesterday, these two guys are here to break it down for you. All righty, man. I'll see you Sunday. Thank you all for listening. Have a good Super Bowl week. We'll see you Sunday. Peace out.
Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.